Oxfam, the humanitarian organization, has said, contrary to what the Israeli government states, the humanitarian aid allowed into Gaza is only a fraction of what is needed to answer the enormous needs of an exhausted people. The World Health Organization has said Israel is blocking vital medical supplies from entering the Gaza Strip. The Red Cross, which very rarely issues public statements, it prefers to use quiet diplomacy. It broke precedent this time and said the blockade of Gaza is having a devastating impact on the 1.5 million people living there. And then when we sued after this point, it was a kind of surreal debate. You had on the one side Israel claiming that it's not true that we've put the people of Gaza on a starvation diet. We've put them on a starvation plus diet. And then you have the human rights organization saying, well, that's not true. You've put them on a starvation diet. And this sort of debate has shifted attention away from, and it's obscured the most fundamental point. Namely, what right did Israel have to put the people of Gaza on any diet? Even Israel's sternest critics, its harshest critics, it agreed with Israel on one point. It said that Israel does have the right, did have the right, and continues to have the right, to prevent Lebanon from reaching Gaza. It has the right to prevent Hamas from being armed. Well, that's not altogether clear. The people under occupation have the right to use force to eject the foreign occupier, and the international law on that question is kind of murky. But if they have the right to use force to eject a foreign occupier, then as B follows A, then they have the right to receive weapons to enable them to use force to eject the foreign occupier. Some of you may feel uncomfortable with that sort of language. Why are we talking about force? Why are we talking about killing? Why are we talking about death? After all, we want to have a peaceful resolution of the conflict. And I can be sympathetic to that. I can see people's point of view. But even if you're of that disposition, the stand of even Israel's sternest critics is completely hypocritical. Because under international law, okay, fair enough, Israel has the right to prevent weapons from going to Gaza, fair enough. But then under international law, as Amnesty International pointed out in an important report entitled Fueling Conflict, Amnesty said that Hamas and Israel are consistent violators of human rights, and therefore under international law, it has to be a comprehensive total arms embargo on Hamas and Israel. So if you're going to insist on the right of Israel, if you're going to insist on the right of Israel to prevent weapons going to Gaza, then you're a complete hypocrite, not to mention a moral coward, to not also point out in the same breath that we have an obligation to prevent weapons from going to Israel. And that's not just rhetoric. Whether you like it or not, or whether we like it or not, that's the law. The law is, the international law is, it's illegal to transfer weapons to a government or a party, or non-state actor, in technical language, which is a consistent violator of human rights. And Amnesty says Israel falls into that category. It's also, incidentally, I know I'm speaking before you, Canadian audience, but as Amnesty pointed out, it's also domestic American law that it's illegal to transfer weapons to a consistent violator of human rights. Well, the humanitarian crisis was ongoing. The blockade of Gaza was illegal, a flagrant violation of international law, a violation of the most basic principle of not of inflicting collective punishment on the civilian population. And at the end of May 2010, about a half year ago now, a flotilla of boats attempted to breach the blockade. And exactly what happened during those fateful hours of May 31st in the dead of night, 4:30 in the morning, exactly what happened will probably never be known. So we have a fairly clear picture. the UN Human Rights Council mandated a commission to investigate what happened. I wouldn't make any brief for the Human Rights Council. I think it's mostly contemptible. However, it's also true to say that the Human Rights Council, when it does mandate investigations, it does choose people of very high repute. And the members of this particular mission were outstanding international jurists. And the picture, which I can't go into now because it's quite detailed, to give a, so to speak, blow-by-blow account of what happened on that day. The main facts are that Israel began the assault on the Wadi Marmara, which is the flagship of the flotilla. It wasn't actually a Turkish flag vessel, it was flagged by the Comoros Islands, but it was mostly Turkish. 60% of the passengers were Turkish. It began the assault on the Wadi Marmara, according to this report, using stun grenades, tear gas, and perhaps plastic bullets. When the first assault was repelled, about 5 minutes later, the helicopters came in, and the report is very clear, and I'm pretty close to quoting it verbatim, that Israel used live ammunition before any commando, any Israeli commando, had hit the deck of the Wadi Marmara. The fancy term is repelled, R-A-P-E-L-L-E-D, repelled on the Wadi Marmara. Before any Israeli commando had hit the deck, Israel was already using live ammunition. It's important to bear in mind, however, that the exact sequence of events that occurred is completely beside the point, because the crucial facts are uncontroversial and undisputed. Number one, Israel had imposed an illegal blockade on Gaza. Number, or as Amnesty International said, a flagrant violation of international law. Number two, that illegal blockade was causing a humanitarian crisis. And therefore, number three, Israel had no right to use force to enforce the blockade. That's just a basic principle of law. You don't have to be a graduate of U of T Law School to grasp the principle. The principle basically says you can't get a right from a wrong. If the blockade was wrong to begin with, then you can't use force to enforce a wrong. The blockade was illegal, and so Israel had no right to use force to enforce the blockade. You can't get a right to enforce a wrong. And so, and Israel, I should add, never even claimed that the flotilla contained weapons, was transporting weapons to Gaza, and expressed no interest whatsoever in searching the vessel for weapons. There is an interesting question, though, which is why did Israel resort to force? Because Israel had many other options. Let's say that Israel did have the right to block the vessel from going to Gaza, for argument's sake. It had many nonviolent options. It could have disabled the propeller on the boat, it could have disabled the rudder on the boat, it could have disabled the engine on the boat, and have just towed the boat to an Israeli port. Israel has a formidable navy. It could have used the navy to block the boats from going to Gaza. Even Israel's own terms, its resort to force made no sense. Most of you in this room will recall that the day after the attack, Israel kept saying, we didn't expect violence. We did not expect the passengers would use force. We expected it would be nonviolent. We thought we'd just be talking to them. We thought they believed in Gandhi. We thought they believed in nonviolence. So Israel said, we were completely shocked. How many people remember Israel saying they were completely shocked by the use of violence? So raise your hand. Fine. So now common sense causes one to ask, if it didn't expect force to be used against it, then why didn't Israel just board the boat in broad daylight? Why didn't it even bring journalists along to show the world its peaceful intentions?